Testing one, two. Okay, today is Wednesday, October 4th, 2017. My name is Pat McKenna. I'm a private investigator out of West Palm Beach. I'm here at Zephyr Hills Correctional Institution talking with Jeremy Scott. It's a follow-up interview, a letter that Mr. Scott sent to Andrew Crawford, went out 9/27 of 17. Mr. Scott talks in the letter that he can describe things about the knife, et cetera, and things that no one else would know. So with that, I would introduce Jeremy Scott. Jeremy, can you raise your right hand? Do you swear that everything you're telling me is the truth and the whole truth?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Can you, for this case name,
Jim Lynn Scott.
And your date of birth, Jeremy?
April 29th, 1969.
And then your DOC number is?
102-402.
Okay. So I've come today. I showed you that I have a copy of the letter you wrote to Mr. Crawford. And I just wanted you to go ahead and just explain what happened that night with Michelle. And in your own words, just describe, you know, the things that you know about that case.
It was the early year of 1987. I got released from prison not too long before. I ran into Michelle. Apparently, we had met, according to her, at a party. It was around February, around midnight, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning or something, at a Texaco station. I've been out drinking, popping pills all night, partying. A 17-year-old kid, just, you know, lying down. And I went to the Texaco station. She asked me, was I waiting on the phone? And I said, no, I need a ride. I'm a little weary, drunk. But she said, I know you. I said, I don't know. But she asked me, was I going? I said, I'm going North Cumming Road. There's trailers, I'm known as sleeping trailers, you know, abandoned houses and stuff. So, I'm not thinking really. She gave me a ride, it's pouring down rain, you know, I got my jacket on, you know. So we're going down North Cumming Road. We go past the old trailer park where I used to live at with my grandparents. Kept on going. And we got down to the backstage, right? I'm thinking, man, it's, you know, maybe I can get laid or something, I don't know. So I tell her to turn off in the road. It's behind the little trees is the lake, you know. It's hooked, it goes through all through Saddle Creek, you know. And people go there all the time. But we get there, you know. She told me, ain't nobody lives here. I said, no, this is where people come make out at. You know, she told me, I'm married. I'm like, that's great, you know. And I went, reached in, grabbed my cigarettes, and put out a joint. I went to light it up, and she told me, don't smoke that, you know. And then out of my pocket fell like a 7-inch knife, maybe. I guess it's in 70. It's one of them hunting knives. It's what you call where at the end of the handle where it has a thing where you knows if you're going east, west, north, or you know, something like
compass.
That. Yeah.
Okay.
And it has a little T mark on the top of the knife. You know, a little hunting knife. You know, not no big butcher knife, none of that stuff. A little, you know, something. But she went to panic and started screaming, hitting, you know, And I'm, you know, and then next thing I know, I lost it, you know. And next thing I know it, you know, I done stabbed her. You know, I don't know how many times I, you know, and I'm like panicking now because what just happened. You know, sit there for a few minutes in the car, and it was raining outside, and I started smoking. Got out the car, went to the driver's side, opened the door, drove over by the lake, held some plastic. I put the plastic around her, try to protect her from being eaten by the gators, snakes, or whatever, you know. And I slid her down in the water, you know. I don't know what was all around. It could have been some logs or something. You know, she could have floated underneath it, I guess. But after that, I got in the car, went up to I-4. And I guess I stalled the car out. I pulled over to the side. Got the knife, I got a towel, a wife used a towel that was in her car, dry the, you know, fingerprints off the car, steering wheel and stuff. Walked up, there's a overpass, named half a mile from where the car was. I don't think it's an exit. I think it's just an overpass, you know, with a fence and stuff. There's a dumpster. And a little store was closed. But I went up the hill on the path. I threw the knife and the towel in there, in the trash. Cause I know the trash, you know, made sure it was, in, you know, in deep in there. I went back down, instead of going to Kissimmee, and I went back, started to head back to Lakeland. You know, there's not a lot of traffic that night. But when I started walking the opposite way and got halfway, I seen, you know, the car I just left across the highway, went near the lane. I went back over there. The driver's door was locked. So I went on the passenger side. I never locked it. And I went and looked in there, and that's when I realized I'm getting a stereo system. There's a little equalizer. And I took the speakers out, and I had to break the equalizer underneath the dash because it got stuck. And I wiped my fingerprints off the doors and stuff again. But that's how my palm print got on the windshield inside the car. But I locked it back up, and I caught a ride in the truck all the way back to Lakeland. I don't know who was driving with that. What are you thinking about that? All I know is I went to the nearest trailer on Cumby Road, and I was passed out the next morning. I went into town. A couple days later, I was at Lakeland Mall, a few days later, actually, I was at the Lakeland Mall by the walk-in theater, by the bathroom. A cop came in, talking about I need to come to the Lakeland Police Department with him. They want to question me. I get there to the police department in the booking area. Some other cop, detective, something said, who is he? They said, that's Jeremy Scott. You want to question about a murder? No, we got the one. That's the first time I heard Schofield's name was mentioned. But I didn't know who Schofield was. Like I said, he might have been at a party with me or something. I don't know. Probably how she knew me. But they talking about. He's free to go. So the cop that brought me to the police station took me back to the mall and dropped me off, you know. And then I ain't heard nothing else about it until, a couple, you know, somebody in the county jail in 87 when I was going, you know, copping a plea to go to prison. A friend of mine was in a cell with him. I can't really recall the name, but he's talking about Leo Schofield and saying that he killed his wife. And he just got a life sentence in prison. You know, and that was, I didn't hear nothing else about it until like in the 90s, late 90s, in the early 2000s, you know. Then I was brought back in 2000, and I want to say 5 or 6 or something. The lawyers wanted to do a deposition on me. You know, here, you know, they saw about, played a recorder of what I was saying to my grandma about the cops coming to see me when I was at Washington and stuff like that. And then I went to see the prosecutor, and John Guerrero was the prosecutor that prosecuted me, put me on the death row. He also is the same prosecutor that prosecuted Leo Schofield. And he told me that a couple rate, that, you know, my pro hearing was coming up, which it was, that he would put a word in, and his word is the bond to them, you know. And so he showed me pictures of Michelle Leo Schofield and the crime scene and stuff. He told me some unbelievable stories. And, you know, I didn't mean to kill Michelle Leo Schofield. I never intended to do any harm. I panicked the night when she started hitting on me. The knife fell out of my jacket. It was meant for nobody. You know, I live alone on the streets. I've been holding this confession for a long time. You know, I don't know what Leo is guilty of. If whatever the state said he did in other cases, I don't know. I do know he didn't murder his wife. He might have did other things to her, but he didn't kill her. And I'm willing to take a line of protector on this. And this is my statement. And I will say it again on a live courtroom.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. And that's the end of this tape.